The following is a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mulman Media Management and staff.
Welcome, this is Joe Poe
and Mary Helen Deere,
hosting Kiowa Talk, created by the late J.T. Goombay, our sponsors for Kiowa Talk here on Saturday on New Country 98.5, Apache, Anadarko, Lawton, Fort Sill, Kiowa's for a Better Future, District 5 Legislator Anita Johnson, District 7 Legislator Jacob Sotai, Susan Campbell, Kiowa Citizen, and Lawrence Spotted Bird, Kiowa Citizen. Today we'll have Jacob Sotai will be giving the opening prayer for our show. How are you doing, Jacob, today, and how's this week gone so far?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much.
All right. Anyway, go ahead. Please proceed.
All right. Let us pray. Aho, Doki, Creator, we come before you humbly asking for your blessings, thanking you for this beautiful day and the refreshing rain that you have sent our way. Acknowledging your spirit and presence, we want to ask for your blessings on our Koigu people as they encounter life's challenges, those who are sick in the hospital, especially dealing with the COVID virus. Please be merciful and bless them with healing. Be with our elders today, those who are struggling alone without anyone to watch over them. May you send someone their way can be helpful to them. Want you to be present with our veterans, our service member, men and women who may be serving at a distance and separated from their families. Be with their families and bring them peace and comfort during their time of absence. We ask you to be with those who are encountering life challenges again, homeless, those who are marginalized, those living in the shadows, those who are hungry today, Lord, give them something to help nourish their body and to keep them strong, to continue their struggle in this life. We ask you to bless our children, especially as they prepare to return back to school. We ask our leadership of our school to be ready to meet the challenges that will confront those students in many different ways, especially the health issues related to the virus. May they be prepared and capable of handling the demands of providing a safe and healthy environment as they return. Be with the teachers who we'll be dealing with those students who may or may not be vaccinated, and help those who are unvaccinated today, Lord, to realize what is at stake what they are jeopardizing and how they could vastly improve their chances for a strong and healthy life if they would but realize the necessary the requirement that they should take upon themselves to become vaccinated. Please be with our tribal leadership, those who are handling the disbursement of funds, the much-needed blessing to our Kiowa people. Help them to be diligent and committed to the task that our people may receive the blessings of this funding and that they are entitled to. Be with that process and help it to move as quickly as possible. So the much-needed help and security of that funding can be realized. And we ask you to be with those who are receiving the funding, that they would use it wisely, they would take care of the needs of their families and relieve the stress that is that they're undergoing through financial challenges. Finally, be with our leadership of our tribe. Help them to do the right thing and always to be aware that they are serving the needs of our people and to set aside self-interest, greed, avarice, and those things that are negatively impacting the ongoing functioning of our tribal systems. Help them to keep the vision of our people foremost in their minds as they work toward accomplishing the things that are needed for our people. And finally, we thank you for all of life's blessings. Be present with us and keep us mindful of your spirit in love. Aho, Doki. Aho.
Jacob, thank you for that thoughtful and uplifting prayer. So the next segment of the show is we have our Kiowa Elder of the Week is Mabel Tsoodle Kozad. And Mary Helen, dear, you go ahead and take this part of the show away. Thank you.
Mabel, good to talk to you, and thank you for coming to our rescue and talking with us today.
You're welcome.
We usually go into four segments. You know, whenever you meet somebody new, you always say, who's your folks? Or, you know, want to know where you're from so they can make some kind of contact with you that gets you closer together. So let's start with Mabel, who's your folks?
My parents are Fred and Peggy Tsoodle. On my father's side, of course, we're Red Teepee descendants and hummingbird. And on my mother's side, her maiden name was Toybo. So we're from the Toybo and the Kwitone families. And I just feel very fortunate that I had the best parents that anyone could have ever asked for. And I feel blessed. And our family, we try to stay as close as we can, you know, have family ties. And that's where I'm from.
Yeah, I remember growing up with you. That's why when your name came up as an elder, I thought, she's not old enough. But time does march on. So you're catching up with me.
Yes.
Tell us about your childhood. You talk about family being close together, and I certainly remember those times. But tell those mm-hmm. in the listening audience about how you grew up.
Well, my parents, they spoke fluent Kiowa. But when we were growing up, I grew up in Oklahoma City. And at that time, in the 60s and 70s, or the 50s and 60s, rather, the trend was to be urbanized. And that's what was promoted. In fact, we were so urbanized that there was an article about our family in the Daily Oklahoman. But our parents still spoke fluent. We still kept our traditions. And as we grew up, they encouraged us to, you know, encouraged education and encouraged us to, you know, do something professional with our lives. And that's what we did. But the only thing about this is that we were so urbanized, we didn't learn our language because they impressed on us to do well in this world and to speak English. And they spoke it at home, and we know terms. And as we grew older, you know, you remember more than you think. And that was the way that I was brought up. But my parents had strong ties with the Oklahoma City community, with all the Kiowas there, and they even had some organizations formed. And we were really close to all of the Kiowas that lived in Oklahoma City as we grew up. And so as we got older, we wished that they had spoken and taught us, and we were wishing that Kiowa could have been our first language, but that was the way that we were brought up at the time. And we all went to, you know, we finished school, went to school, and I was fortunate to be able to graduate from Oklahoma City University, and we still lived in the city, and I just feel blessed for the education that was provided for me. And the only, you know, like I said, the only thing that I'm sorry about is not being able to speak fluent Kiowa. But as far as knowing our traditions, our father was very adamant about keeping our Kiowa traditions. And he was taught as he was growing up from his father and his grandfather that to just join one organization and do the very, very best you can at that. And so our family, our Kiowa Gort clan, and so that's how we grew up. That was the only organization that my father was a member of, even though he supported the Kiowa Black Leggings, and we always camped there, but he was really never a member because he listened to the advice of his father and grandfather. And our Kiowa Gort clan is what we grew up with. And we still have, you know, we still know all our traditions and everything. We have another thing I'm really grateful for is that my parents were Christians, and we were brought up in a Christian home. And so not only did our life evolve around the Kiowa Gort clan, but also our home church, which is Rainy Mountain Kiowa Indian Baptist Church. We went to church in Oklahoma City there, but we always came home for the holidays. And two things have never changed in my entire life, and that's the 4th of July at Carnegie and Christmas at Rainy Mountain. We very rarely missed any holidays that were at Rainy Mountain Church. So I'm very, very fortunate for that. And our grandparents went to church there. And that's what I'm mostly grateful to for our Christian heritage.
Speaking of heritage, didn't you also serve as Kiowa Princess?
Yes, I did. I love to dance. And I love to be in the contest. When I started contest, the prize money was like 25, 15, and 10. And we thought that was just wonderful. And my parents would take me wherever I wanted to go to dance. And that's what we did. And yes, I was fortunate to be Kiowa Princess. I remember my parents had no idea that I was even interested in. About 3 days before the deadline, I told them I would like to run, and they hustled around and got the picture and got everything done that we wanted. But I'm proud of that. I'm proud of being elected, and it was fun. And at that time, there were a lot of big Oklahoma City area powers and Tulsa area powers, and I was also fortunate to be the Tulsa Power Princess. And that was something that at that time, of course, in the 70s. That in that time, it was something very, very big, because you got to meet the mayor, you got to be on the front page of their paper. At the powwow, you got to, I remember on Sunday night, you got to go to the Civic Center and dance under spotlight. It was something really big at that time. But also, Kiowa Prince too is fun. The parade was fun. At that time, the fair was just at its height. And it was, you know, it was a wonderful time growing up then, and it was a lot of fun. And my parents, you know, they did whatever made us, you know, whatever we wanted to do, you know. They want to excel our traditions, and they did the best that they could.
What year were you princess, Kiowa Princess?
1970.
Oh, okay.
I was old. Now they're like 16, 17. I was 20. I was 19 going to 20. So I was older when I was princess.
And that's so old.
Yes. Compared to the girls now that are princesses.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
It was so long ago, we didn't even wear banners. And I remember a dear friend of ours made me a banner kind of towards the end of my reign. And it just had Kiowa in the biggest letters. It was funny when we look at those pictures. But people didn't wear banners, and we didn't have shawls and
Giant crowns,
and that was it.
Yeah, or giant crowns, those big giant crowns.
No, uh-uh.
They'll tilt you over. Yeah. So, what? So, you mentioned going to OCU. What did you go to school for, and was that your life career?
Well, no, I started out in nursing school. And I completed the pre-nursing at Southwestern. Then when I changed my mind. I didn't want to be a nurse. And so I decided to go into teaching. So I switched from Southwestern to OCU. And that's where I got my bachelor and my master's degree. And I started my teaching career at Chilocco. And at Chilocco, it was just about a year or a year and a half before they closed it down. And so I worked there. And then my husband got a job at Shawnee. He was a welder. Louis Kozad is my husband. And so we moved to Shawnee, and I taught at Shawnee, and then his job moved to Oklahoma City. So I have taught, and I feel fortunate to have taught at many different venues, because I taught in Oklahoma City Public Schools. And from there, we moved to Anadarko. And then I taught at Anadarko, and then I transferred to Riverside, and that was where I retired from. And when I really enjoyed my teaching career, all of the different places that I was able to teach and to get all these different experiences. But after retirement, we live on my grandfather, Milton Toybo's, original allotment in Mountain View. And our home is still here. My grandparents were here. And my parents retired, and they took care of them. And then now we have retired, and we're taking care of my mother. I feel very fortunate. She's 98 years old. And she's had some health issues this past month, and we finally have her at home, and we're taking care of her here. So it just seems like, you know, this is how we are. We take care of our grandparents, our parents, our family. You know, we will do everything we can not to put them in a nursing home or anywhere. We keep them, and that's what my sister and I now have devoted all of our time to, taking care of our mother, and that's what we're doing right now.
And that's the Indian way. That's what we do.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I have my grandchildren. They love Mountain View Schools, and it's a good school system, and we're just, you know, I just feel real fortunate to live here. I just love being out here in the country, and and being able, this is our history, our home, at the home place. This is where my mother and my aunt and uncle were born. They were born here on this allotment. Mm-hmm. And we still have it, and it's just, you know, it's just really nice.
Yeah. And we want to get Dolores on the radio show at some point, but I just haven't gotten in touch with them. Did you ever play hand games?
That's all we do. Since the pandemic, yes, we have always played hand games. We really got into it probably in the 80s because my mom and dad, they would go to hand games in Oklahoma City. You know, people would have hand games there. But my husband and I got into it in the 80s, and we joined a team, and we just love hand game. In fact, we have just about put that palace on the back burner because we do nothing but play hand game. And we got to play hand game during the pandemic because it was outside, and we wore masks, and we absolutely love to play. That's our thing. For many years, like I told you, we love to dance, my husband and I, and our son sings, our daughter dances and sings too. And for a while there, we just stayed on the road. We were on the powwow contest circuit, and we've been all over the United States. I feel fortunate for that. And we've been able to dance at all the dances. And my husband, I don't mean to brag or anything, but when we go somewhere, he's the winner. I'm just a fringe benefit. If I play, it's okay, and it's fun. But he's the one that's really into it, and he's the one that is the winner in the family. And I'm very, very proud of his dancing, and I'm very proud of our son and his singing and his singing abilities. And he, my father and my brother Bubba Noel taught Freddie, our son, how to sing, and now he is really into the church hymns, and he's asked to sing at a lot of funerals, of course, and he sings. But what I'm mostly proud of is that my father said, do not sing anything that you do not know what you're saying, because there are songs for every occasion. And if you don't know what you're singing, you could sing the wrong song for the occasion. So you have to be careful and know Kiowa. And right now, I am working with the language department, Kiowa Language Department. And I've been doing that now for over a year. And when my dear aunt, Juanita Auton, passed away, she asked me to take her place before when she's getting ill. And she said, it's not because you're a fluent Kiowa speaker, in which I am not. It's because of my teaching skills and ability. And so that's what I'm into now. And Freddie is one of the candidates to teach Kiowa. And I'm just really proud of this program and what it has done to teach our language and to teach teachers, so they will be able to teach others Kiowa. But once I got into that, I was surprised how much Kiowa I did remember. And so that's a good program that our tribe is, that our program has, our Kiowa tribe has, rather.
Well, that's good. Yeah, and by the way, Freddie has the most beautiful voice. I love hearing him sing. So we're
Thank
coming
you.
To the end of our time here now, and you've had lots of opportunities to interact with young people, you know, being a teacher and now teaching with the language program. So what kind of advice would you give to young people growing up now?
Well, I know that a lot of our elders are gone, but I wish that things would have been more recorded, like everyday conversations, just like you remember my uncle, my late uncle Luke Trebo? Uh-huh. When we would talk to him, he was just like talking to a history book because he had a very, very sharp memory. And I used to love to ride with him because he would know so much. And he knew everybody's allotments around. And he was, you know, just very interesting. And that is what I wish that young people would start recording now or start, you know, well, they don't have recorders now, but use the computer as they speak to their elders and try to remember all that they can. My father, I just love to hear stories of his childhood and stories of how he became a Christian and stories about the Kiowa Gort clan. But we didn't record any of his recordings, and I just, you know, of his speaking or just everyday conversations. I, you know, young people need to pay more attention. But see, you can still get your education and you can still be a Kiowa. You know, there's no difference. You can still be an educated person and still participate, still learn your language and still be a part and learn more about our culture, because a lot of our culture is being lost. When you go somewhere, you see, like, for an example, how some of the women dance at some of the dances. I know that our elders did not dance like that. And see, just little things like that. Just pay more attention, I think, would be the best advice to what your grandmother is saying now, what your great-grandmother or grandfather is saying now. And I feel bad for those students. Like at Riverside, I was exposed to so many students that didn't have any families, that didn't, you know, some of them never wanted to go home. And that would just break my heart to know that some of us are so fortunate to have the family that we did and have all the things that we had as we were growing up. And there are so many that do not. But my advice would be to just, you know, pay more attention to what your elders say about our culture and our language. Because we don't want anything to die. You know, we want to keep up as much as we can.
So, Mabel, I wanted to say that we missed you at the hand game tournament at Indian Hills, and we missed you at the powwow. And Lewis and Freddie were there, and that's too bad that you couldn't come also. Anyway, thank you for taking time to come on our show and coming to our rescue. Mary Helen and I really appreciate it.
Yes, we do. And
you're welcome.
Some of the topics, you know, we can expand on. We might have you come back and talk about some of these things, because there's whole conversations that need to be.
Well, right now, as we're leaving, I'm thinking of a lot more things I could have told you.
Well, write them down.
Well, see, but, you know, like you said, a lot of these things should be recorded. Well, we're doing it right now. So this is being recorded and it's archived. Mm-hmm. So. We'll let you go. We're going to move on to our next segment, but we'll have you on again. All right.
Thank you, Mabel.
Thank you, Mabel, for taking time. Thank you very much for asking me. Yes,
uh-huh.
Ma'am. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. That was Mabel Tootle Kozad on the line, and she was the Kiowa Elder of the Week. And our next guest is Elena Quitone, and she was our guest last week, but she didn't have time to finish. So, Elena, the floor is yours.
All righty. Thank you so much, Joe, for having me back again. I just wanted to let you know my background first, because I know a lot of people are probably wondering, you know, who is Elena Quitone? Why is she, you know, speaking up and out? And really, I think a lot of it's just in my blood, because I've tried to bow out and tried not to be involved. But, you know, I can't stop myself, because there's things that need to be spoken about and talked about. And then I originally was tagging along with the Constitution Committee and became involved that way. And then the KMCC page, Kiowa Members for Constitutional Change, I got involved with that simply because that was my contribution to that committee. I was retired at the time. And so that's why I was always voicing, you know, whatever was going on at the time. But just a little background. My dad is Alan Cretone. My mom was Pat Wycliffe Cretone. And so I am a quarter Cherokee, and I could actually be on the Cherokee role. Oh, I am on the role, but I could be enrolled Cherokee instead of Kiowa. My grandpa was the late Reverend Guy Cretone. My great-grandpa was Jimmy Cretone, and I am a Stumbling Bear descendant. And what I'd like to do, and what I didn't finish last week, I probably may, you know, repeat myself a little bit too, and I apologize for that. But I'm just going to go through the list of why where we're at this time, why we've decided that, you know, there's a need for the KIC, the Kiowa Indian Council, voice to be heard, and it as if, especially after our last little rally we had last Tuesday, it was supposed to be, well, it was outside the CFR court. I was very, you know, disappointed and in, you know, the show of people. A lot of people came by to sign the recall, to sign the petition to get a KIC meeting going. But we have to have a voice, and it's real, real hard. If, you know, I was ready just to quit after that, and it's just something I cannot do, because if we don't stop it, who is going to? All this corruption that's ongoing within our tribe. So I want folks to realize how deep this runs. That's why I'm on here again. I want people to know that it's not just our administration. It's also the CFR court. It also runs through the BIA as well, the regional office. And so that's where we had planned to protest or rally eventually. Also, Rylan Rebus's office is a place we've talked about that we want to actually hold another rally or protest. So, you know, I'm just going to mention some of the things or the reasons that has brought us to this. And these are things that have happened within our tribe by our executive branch. The first thing, I'm just going to go through a list here that I've made, and I'm sure I'm leaving out many things, and there are many things on here. And so, for one thing, we've had a very, very high turnover, firing qualified people and hiring unqualified, incompetent people in their place for a reason. So there's been unconstitutional hiring, unconstitutional purchases. There's been no due process, so wrongful termination for those folks that were fired or let go. There's also been a legal movement of money from the KCOA. In fact, there was a suit brought by Joe. $6 million was moved, and actually all the CFR court did was pretty much slap our chairman on the hand, you know, and just tell him to budget the money, when that's something pretty, you know, illegal and just not right for that to be handled in that way. So there's been a lot of misappropriation and misspending of funds. And one thing that stands out for me, there's a lot of conflict of interest here and there, but one major thing that stands out to me is the chairman is married to the Kiowa Gaming Commission's executive director. And apparently that was supposed to have been a temporary position for her, but it's been, it's been quite some time that this has been going on. So that's huge conflict of interest. There are still folks that have not received their CARES Act funds, and here we are, you know, working on our ARP funds now, and right now at this point, people are up in arms about that, and I'll go into that a little bit in just a little bit. Still with no judicial system. So that's why we are reliant or dependent on the CFR courts. But it's almost like a joke, because we know, you know, pretty much that anything that goes through CFR, I think things are already worked out, and I don't think things are going to be going our way no matter what happens. And so that's just not right. We still have no Department of Law Enforcement after 4 years. And when I say that, it's been that long since we have voted in the new constitution, and there were many, many changes which created four branches, but we still do not have law enforcement. We don't have our judicial system, and those are major. And so, you know, to me, just a few of these things are bad enough to want to recall or to impeach our chairman, but there's many more things going on. And when you think about it, it's unreal. I don't know how, if anybody sat down and looked at all of this, they would ever think that he would still be functioning after all this time doing the things that he's doing. without the knowledge of so many of our, well, our branches, and not going through the requirements in the Constitution to get things done. As I've mentioned before, there's a fear, atmosphere of fear, not just within the employees of the tribe, but there's also an atmosphere of fear within our people. Things happen. And so employees fear for their jobs. In fact, they are asked to sign a non-disclosure statement when they are hired, a non-disclosure agreement when they're hired. And generally those are, companies that are in competition with each other, that ask their employees to keep, things hush hush about trade secrets, or, to protect ideas and research and possible, just different things like that. So it's kind of difficult for the employees there. They're afraid to speak out, because what happens when they do lose their jobs, and then it is done usually in not a good manner. They're escorted out, and they've done no wrong except maybe be whistleblowers, or just, being asked to do things that they do not want to do right. There's no budget projections of revenues, and that is that's his job. The chairman is supposed to make projections of revenues and expenditures, including any contributions required of the tribe in any grant proposal, and that's supposed to, help prepare the annual budget, and that includes funds controlled on all sources, and that includes the funding we just received, the ARPA funds, and then the past CARES Act funding. That's not been the way the funds are being distributed right now. It's not gone through that process, but we had mentioned filing an injunction stopping that funding, but we cannot do that rightfully. Our people are hurting, and we're not going to stop the funding, even though it's being done illegally at this time, because that would hurt our people even further. And the reason our people are hurting is because, there's many things that have gone on. Well, the money, they say, the reason that we were asking for $3,000, the legislature was asking for $3,000 per person, every individual, whether they were an adult or a child, was simply because our programs and, the different things that are supposed to be helping, departments that are supposed to be helping our people are not there. They're not helping the people. If they're not, when they go for help and there's supposed to be money there and they're not getting help with their houses and they're not getting help with whatever bills need to be paid when they're behind all due to COVID, then by golly, they deserve to have this money up front, because everybody's hurting and there's some more in need than others. And it's just very, very, and that's why I understand that we didn't have a great show. And that's why I know that the day that this past Tuesday, when we did have our rally, most people were over at the Department of Human, the old building there where they were supposed to be sending out the funding, the ARPA funds, and people were up in arms about that because it's not being handled right again. And so I think people have had enough. They're finally, their eyes are being opened. But, when you're struggling and you can't see the big picture, when you're struggling just to live, get a roof over your head, you're homeless, you can't pay your bills, you can't buy food, and that's like, I'm a retired teacher, and I think of the kids that come into our classrooms and how, we want them to do this and that and excel. Well, many of them are just happy to be there and just to be, have a little comfort and food and are struggling at home. So, we can't expect them to learn in the same way a person who has everything provided for them at home would learn. And so that's how I have to try to understand why our people are not there for us and understanding when we say this is happening, this is going on, we've got to stop it. You've got to show up to these, these rallies, these protests we're having. It's very, very important. I understand, that they are struggling and they're trying just to keep their heads above water. And so, I get that. And we're going to continue, doing what we're doing because nobody else is doing it. And we are KIC members. And we are a branch of the government that has been muted, that is not being allowed to speak, that has had no KIC meeting in 2 years. And So we're having to do it, you know, I believe the legislature could do it easily or easier, but we are in the process of collecting 400 signatures right now so that we can get our KIC meeting. The KIC coordinator pretty much had his hands tied by being, you know, his salary was taken away, his phone was taken away, and so we have no KIC coordinator at this time. Well, according to the executive branch. But yeah, when you have a chairman that, you know, if someone speaks out, just a regular KIC member, if they speak out, their places of employment are being called. Their houses are being visited, or there has been one incident, and Cheryl Pula explained that last week about what happened, you know, and it's just kind of ridiculous. It's unreal. So, you know, you don't feel like you can speak out against him. So there's that fear, not just within the employees, but, you know, also within our people. They're afraid they may not get the money. They may not. And that's very real fear as well. And I understand that because we, you know, it's just known that things are not going as they should be behind closed doors where those monies are supposed to be distributed. And a lot of it goes back to our IT system, which I mentioned last week, and how, you know, we are, it's a joke. When you have the monies and you don't, that's not the first thing you take care of, you know, it's hard to understand. Our systems, we have, you know, different addresses for the tag agency, the enrollment, and then our election commission. And so those need to be consolidated, and that, you know, there's just no excuse for when there's monies available for that to be brought up to date. So that, and I think that would enable this process of distributing this funding. It would enable it to go much smoother. But that's not happening. We had our first protest July 21st, and we weren't trying to, you know, do anything wrong. We're just trying to get this out there to the general public, who hopefully would put pressure on those authorities that can do something about this. And so the mayor was called at Carnegie, the police chief was called, we had escort, we had, you know, they knew what was happening. We could not get our own land. We could not get the land by the adult education building across the way. We couldn't get an okay on it, but we were allowed by a cement company to use their land, even though, you know, we were told one of our members, committee members, had okayed it with the, of course, our chairman was out of state, which was a good thing at that time, we thought. We were okay to be able to use the restrooms there by the security at the complex. We were going to be able to use the restrooms at the Red Buffalo Hall. We were going to be able to park in that area. We had asked if the AOA would provide meals, extra meals that day, because we knew we were going to have elders there, and we didn't want anybody going without food. And so we were told, well, you'll have to go through your chairman, the chairman. And then we were told probably more than likely it's going to be closed, which just floored me, and it was closed. And the gates were locked, and there were barricades behind the gates, and people were scared. And you know, even though we told them it's a peaceful protest, it's not about, you know, storming the gates. It's not about any of that. But, you know, that was just, and there were people that did not get their lunches those days, the regulars. You know, I just assumed, I said, well, okay, they're probably going to deliver them. But not everybody got those meals, and there were many, many of our elders that did show up at the gates that day and couldn't get in. And those gates, you know, they've been up there a year now. And why? Why do we have gates at our complex, you know, our people's complex? That's very unwelcoming, and it says a lot. So, you know, that was very upsetting for that day. Another conflict of interest, Rylan Rivas is our executive committee's attorney, but it's more like Matt's personal attorney. You know, he helped fight his impeachment on the tribe's dime. His son is a prosecutor. Rylan Rivas's son, Rylan Rivas, I think the second or junior, is a prosecutor for the CFR court. And it's a possibility that Rylan Rivas is on the board of the Verdant Bank, where our money is kept. You know, so that's another, you know, big, huge red flag, all of that. We talk about, you know, I'm going to go ahead and mention Frieda. She is over the money, the distribution, and I was floored when she was reassigned, you know, that same job again this year. And I had hope, you know, that maybe they learned some things from what happened last year and things would go smoother. And but from what I can hear and what I see, I'm not, you know, it's not happening again. And that's very sad. But not only is she in charge of that, she is on the KCA Indian Land Use Committee, and she's also on the Economic Development Board, and I'm sure receiving paychecks for all of that in some way or another. But I don't, you know, and then these positions that people are in, and she's one of the main ones, were overstepping boundaries and not very friendly to people, you know, our KIC people, who they work for us, you know, and so that, you know, we just expect a lot more in the way of assistance to our people, kindness to our people, understanding of our people, and that's not happening. Terry Bruner, you know, there's ties also as well, Don Topai and Frieda Sepetah, they both worked for the BIA before they came to our tribe. And so, you know, there are ties there with BIA and CFR court. All of those things together along with the executive branch are, you know, feel pretty much like the KIC's hands are always going to be tied. And so if we don't do anything, nothing's going to happen again. And this has happened time and time again with our administration. And for him to get away with as much as he's gotten away with is just, it just shouldn't happen. So Terry Bruner is someone, you know, that we were wanting to talk to and has been talked to before about the different discrepancies and things going on within our tribe. And he works at the regional office. And I found out that he's also a city judge for Anadarko, which to me is also a conflict of interest.
Hey, Elena, we're running a little short of time. I knew that when we pulled your string that you would go for a long time. But you have
I didn't think I'd have that much to say, but yeah. It's, you know, but it's endless, and I probably could go on for a while, and I, you know, but I appreciate the time to at least talk about it and to get it out there, and I hope people are listening, and I hope people will show up the next rally that we do have and understand, you know, if you can, that, you know, our bodies are needed. We need people out there to make our plight known and get our pleas out there for somebody to listen to us as the KIC.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Well, you let me know when you've got something to say, and we'll get you some time on the show coming up, all right?
All right.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you, Elena. All right, so that was Elena Quitone and to talk about past events and where we're going to go from here. So the next portion of the show, Anita Johnson is out of the state at a conference, an elders conference. And so Jacob is here to give the current legislative updates and a very interesting twist of events. Jacob, it's your time, and take it away.
Well, thank you, Joe. I just want to echo the sentiment of Ms. Quitone that it is time for us to assert ourselves, not just on Facebook, but physically whenever there is a rally call that people respond. I was at the Anadarko rally briefly to pick up my grandson, wasn't feeling well. I didn't get to stay. But I do know when I was there, there was only a handful of people. And it takes more than that for attention to be drawn to the many injustices that have pervaded our tribe during the past 3 years. She did a good job of outlining those. And we need to really understand the seriousness of what we're confronting in this chaotic administration. It continues to deepen and divide the tribe and our people. And we need to realize that this won't come to an end until this chairman is recalled, until this chairman is physically removed from office by the will of the people. And we need people to sign those petitions and realize that without this extreme action, we will not have change. We will not have the desired outcomes that we need as Kiowa citizens to reclaim that which is rightfully ours, reclaim a sense of direction as a people, reclaim that the lofty levels that we have achieved over the years. Our legacy is proud, and it is one that we are, over the years, have stood out for what we stood for physically and spiritually. And I think that that's the whole shame and frustration we feel now, is that we've lost our way. We are wandering in the wilderness because of the greed, the egos, the incompetence of what we're confronted by when we look to the tribe. And to have our tribal administration close down and shut down the tribal complex these past months is abhorrent to what we stand for. Our government is to serve the people, not to be served. Our government is to exist to remedy the ills of our people, not to create more ills that we have to fight to overcome. It's really frustrating, and it makes me extremely angry that we have stooped so low as to keep the people at a distance so that they cannot access the services and programs they need to meet the challenges of their daily life. And I'm just hopeful that we will rise up and assert ourselves to remedy our situation. We hold the remedy in our hands, literally our hands, our signatures. If we cannot accomplish what needs to be, then we have no one to blame but ourselves. And that's what leads me to this. I heard from one of the constituents who lives, one of our citizens who lives in Anadarko, and as she was trying to go by the center to pick up what is rightfully hers, she was questioned there as to whether or not her signature was on the recall, that somehow this individual who was asking her this had seen her signature. And, of course, she had the nerve to tell her no, because there's no rhyme or reason, and certainly no legal way for them to access these petitions prior to their submission, which isn't until the 24th of this month. And for them to have privy to that and to use that as an angle to discourage others from asserting their power, individual power, by making allusions to them raising their voice, as if to say, if you're on that recall list, you will not have access to what is rightfully yours. And I was just so astonishing to me that they could sink to that depth to try to intimidate our people, try to give them barriers to what is rightfully theirs, because they had the audacity to speak up through their signature. That is just horribly wrong. And I hope that that will stop, that people will consider what they're doing, because there's a legal question here. And I brought that to our attorney for him to discuss with the administration's attorney, to let them know that this will not be pushed aside. We will not allow this to happen to our people. They have every right to assert their voice, and they also have every right to attain that which is rightfully theirs through the ARP funding. Every citizen in the Kiowa tribe was used to obtain the funding, and we have every right to attain a little bit of a portion of it in order to sustain our lives to do much needed, to overcome much needed assistance to face life's challenges. It's just ridiculous that what our people are having to encounter.
I agree with you, Jacob. One thing that we wanted to make sure that the Kiowa people know is that these petitions are not being seen by anyone at the tribe. They're held by the petition holders. As soon as there's 20 signatures on them, they're turned over to the holder of all of those. And I can promise you that he wants nothing to do with the chairman. And so no one sees these petitions after you sign them. So anyone who thinks that just because you sign the petition, you won't get funded, that is not true, because they will never see the signatures unless we are successful in getting the 1,800 signatures. And if we do and we turn it in, then they can look at the signatures, but it's too late, because if we get 1,800 signatures, he's out of there. So I just was a point I wanted to make. Jacob, we're running short on time, so you got another minute. Go ahead.
Well, I just want our people to have faith, to be encouraged that their time will come, that we will once again be able to function in a government, a system that looks to their needs, looks to their issues, and that we will overcome this crisis in government soon. And I want to for them to be hopeful and look upward, good things will come to those who persist. Good things will come to those who make a stand and provide that necessary point for our KIC to move forward, because they have not been addressed in a way that would be considered appropriate or for the good of the tribe.
All right, Jacob, thank you for taking time to be on the show today. As always, I appreciate it, your comments and your hard work on behalf of the Kiowa people. You have a great day.
Well, I just want them to remember that phrase, "Faith, faith, hang in there, faith."
Yes, sir. All right, we've got a few announcements. Again, a request for recall for the election of the Kiowa chairman was filed with the Kiowa Election Commission on May 27th. Its due date is August 24th. Please contact or you can go to any of the Kiowa boards and you can find a list of the petition holders for you to get in touch with. Events for this weekend. We only have two events, and Mary Helen, you can go over one.
Yes, we have the 8th Annual Central Oklahoma Native American Art Sale at the Cleveland County Fairgrounds, east end of the South Building, 615 East Robinson in Norman, Saturday, August 7th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. They feature baskets, jewelry, pottery, beadwork, paintings, and books, and much, much more. You go, and you might find some of your family heirlooms there.
That's right. You just never know. And we've only got one powwow this week. It's the 45th Annual Caw Powwow, August 6th through the 8th. The MC is Oliver Littlecook, and it looks like they've got a full three-day agenda with contests. Looks very similar to the agenda at Indian Hills. So make sure that if you want to go to a powwow, there's one at the Caw Powwow, and the contact there is Kim Jenkins, and you can reach her at 580-269-5225. We want to remind everyone to get vaccinated. The reason why this COVID spike has occurred is from the people that haven't gotten vaccinated. So if you had gotten vaccinated, we wouldn't have had this spike going on right now. Please contact your closest IHS clinic to find out how. Carnegie can be reached at 580-654-2533, Lawton 580-354-5000, and Anadarko 405-247-7900. We'd like to thank our special guests for speaking today, as well as all of the Koigu people for tuning into our program on KACO New Country 98.5, Apache, Anadarko, Lawton, Fort Sill. Please pray for the Kiowa people, and as JT would say, goombye for now.
The previous was a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mormon Media management and staff.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Getting support from friends online kept me on track.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
Instead of smoking after I ate, I'd get up and take a walk.
I missed having a cigarette in my hand, so I'd hold a pen or a straw, anything.
Until I knew I wouldn't give in to temptation, I spent more time with my friends who didn't smoke.
I went to places that were smoke-free.
I didn't stay quit the very first time I tried.
I kept on trying, and I learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
I quit.
I quit.
I quit.
We did it. So can you.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.